Thank you, and I appreciate being selected to present on the development and evaluation of a program we've been working on for about the last two and a half to 3 years. But given what we just heard in the last presentation, I'd also like to take this opportunity just to say that many of the aspects that were just talked about in terms of what we think of as a traditional community also very much hold true in the health professional, in defining a community as a group of health professionals, defining, as I will, a community of social and behavioral science researchers. If we do a top-down approach, it doesn't work. It doesn't take. People don't use it. They can't apply it. And so looking at going to that community, whatever community it is, and saying, what do you actually need? What level do we need to start at? Where do we need to take this? How are you going to apply it? I think is a really important theme that we should take away from that, and hopefully I will emphasize also in terms of our approach in developing an educational program. So I also have no relationships to disclose. The project that I'm going to be talking about is funded through a contract with the Office of Behavioral and Social Science Research at the NIH. And this is one of the first web-based educational program they've taken on. They have a long history of doing very well-received short courses, about 3 week short courses, or 1 week short courses in the summer, where you get a lot of very intensive training for a small group of people. And so they saw doing a web-based education program as an opportunity to have a broader reach and maybe build on it with a short course in the future. The way I'm going to structure my talk is looking at the different stages of development and evaluation. As many of you are probably very familiar, these two activities need to be very closely interconnected, because in order to be able to evaluate and see if you've had something, you've developed something that has impact, you need to say what are the outcomes we're looking for, so that we can develop a program that can actually address those outcomes and can facilitate accomplishing those outcomes. So I'm going to structure my comments around the different stages here. Also, full disclosure is when I wrote the abstract for this meeting, we anticipated being well into summative evaluation, having found another funding source. We were actually given the opportunity for a no-cost extension to expand our formative evaluation. And as you'll hopefully see, for the group that we're talking about, we felt that that formative evaluation is really critical. And so I'm going to talk about summative evaluation, but more ideas, not data. So first stage, needs assessment. What are the gaps? And again, this is an educational program in genetics for social and behavioral science researchers. So I think in general, the gaps are clear. There is a clear need to integrate the expertise of social science researchers and genetics researchers in order to really get at what is the underlying biology of most of the common chronic diseases and behaviors that we see, and what interventions are actually going to work, and for what segment of the population are they going to work? How do we really target our efforts most effectively? And I think this is generally accepted as a need to sort of combine these different ways of thinking, different perspectives, and different expertise. The problem has been, how do you do it? How do you get the educational, how can you have these two very different groups talk to each other? You're talking about totally different vocabulary, different approaches, a different look at the world in many cases. And the path to getting people on the same page is definitely not clear. As we talk to more and more people, you heard anecdotes of social science researchers sitting in the back of genetics conference thanking their lucky stars that there was a Wi-Fi connection, because then they could look up and Google every other word that was spoken. And I heard it from more than one person. And I actually, even trained as a genetic counselor, I often feel that way in genetics conferences myself, because being able to target and talk to the audience that you're trying to reach is a skill that is underappreciated and desperately needed. So again, what we saw was that the need was clearly there, and then the question is how do we develop a program that will be useful for the audience and that they will actually be able to apply in the future? So as I've already mentioned, and as those in the room are probably aware, there are many challenges with trying to tackle a program like this. When I say we're developing a program for social and behavioral science researchers, that is a huge range of individuals with very different research interests, everything from looking at behavior in mouse models to doing clinical research and looking at behaviors in people, and everything in between and more. So you're trying to find a common ground. You're also looking at people coming in with very different experience in terms of research. Qualitative researchers, quantitative researchers, just a very different approach. So finding the right level of detail that at least people can get a shared understanding is difficult. Also, when we're talking about wanting to promote transdisciplinary research, which is really what we're talking about when we're saying integrate social science research and genetics research, this has to be bidirectional. The program I'm going to talk about today is getting social and behavioral science researchers up to a level of genomics literacy so they can identify and talk to their colleagues. But as desperately needed is the opposite, is getting geneticists to realize they actually don't know how to do social and behavioral science. And in fact, there's a lot that can be that they can learn from their colleagues and to get them to that level of vocabulary competence as well. And unfortunately, I'm not going to be talking about that today, maybe in another 3 years or so. We'll see. So first, before I talk about the specific development, just to let you know why we thought we could even approach this, the NCHPEG, National Coalition for Health Professional Education and Genetics, hence the reason we call ourselves NCHPEG, is a nonprofit organization that's been around for about 15 years, and we have a long history of developing web-based and now live educational programs for a variety of mainly health professional audiences. But we felt that when we saw this need and started talking to OBSSR about it, that this was something that our development process, and this was an audience that we thought that we could take on. And there are many overlapping issues that we know of from the health professional work we've done as well. So again, going into this, our goals, after talking to a number of people, are, of course, we want to increase knowledge. That's what every educational program wants to do. But as important, or actually more important, is how do you increase knowledge? What kind of knowledge are you increasing? What are you trying to do? And so we sectioned it out into four different areas. So conversation, let's get these people to be able to talk to each other, be comfortable asking questions in a language they're familiar with. Increase the imagination. Let me have them begin to imagine how genomics could be incorporated into the research they're currently doing. How do they evaluate when it's ready for prime time, when a genetic variant is, okay, I will start incorporating this into my research. And then integration. How do you facilitate that transdisciplinary research model that we're striving for? So the guiding principles going into our development are the same that we use for any developmental program and are based in educational theory. We don't want to reinvent the wheel. There are a lot of great resources out there. We want to really focus on how do adults learn. These are especially for this audience. This is a group of people who are going to be coming in for very different reasons. You have trainees who are potentially forced into it, and then you have existing researchers who are trying to answer an RFP that says, you must incorporate a genetic variant, and that's what they're doing these days. And so they're sort of forced into it, and so the motivation may be more external than internal. So again, it needs to be self-directed. They need to be able to get into it whatever way they want. And then the most important thing is to ask, develop, ask, and ask again, and still at the end recognize that there's never going to be a final product, which is great. The only problem comes in is continued funding, but that's another issue that we'll deal with another day. So one of the ways we tried to approach the diverse audience was to bring together a group of advisors who could really guide us in the breadth of the topics that we could potentially cover, and also people who could also deal with the depth. What level of genetics knowledge do people need? And in order to simplify things so that it is at an easy level, you really have to understand it well. If you don't understand it well, it's much harder to simplify the information to a reasonable level. So we had a great group of advisors at the beginning who helped to develop what we now have as our site structure. So the site is based around case studies or research examples, but those are supported by learning modules that are a little bit more didactic. And then we wanted to also bring in the many, many resources that are available to sort of spark that imagination. And we'll go through some specific examples. But the idea was to make all of these things very interconnected. So again, that people can get in a number of different ways. If they're looking for specific information, they can get in that way. But if they're just, where do I start, which is actually something we heard a lot from our reviewers, is I didn't know where to start, so I started with obesity because it looked interesting. They can also get that fundamental knowledge going through that approach. So this is the site. It's a lot more dynamic when it's on the web, but it essentially, this picture just sort of highlights the different aspects that are on it. And just to sort of step you through, so the four case studies are on obesity, which really focuses more generally on collaboration, nicotine addiction, focusing on research methods, major depression, gene and environment interaction, breast cancer, which really is a great example of transdisciplinary research and how you go about it. One of the things that we're limited is we can't have people, and one thing that you'll see later that people want is a way to connect. And that's very difficult to do given the current structure and funding mechanism and all of that. And so one of the things we tried to do is tell stories, is to interview researchers who had gone through it and to help us identify the challenges, provide tools, give quotes, those types of things so that it feels familiar to people because they can relate to the same challenges that these researchers have had. The learning modules, again, are the more sort of typical type of education, and they go through this list that you can look at. One of the real things that we wanted to emphasize was this idea of variation. That variation is something that everybody is familiar with. We just look at it from different perspectives. And so we're trying to run a thread throughout the course. And so you can look at, these are a few, and again, you can get to these in multiple ways depending on how. Oh, 1 minute. Oh, okay. Much better. So the resources, again, are a lot of different things are out there. So I don't know if any of you are familiar with Radiolab. There's some great things there that we can actually just embed right away. There's a great PBS video on epigenetics, which we have permission to put onto our site. And so there are a lot of great resources. And this is the idea of sparking the imagination. Let's use what's already out there. So next, now we have a program, but let's look at it. Is the content accessible and credible? So there are different forms of formative evaluation. We first had the content reviewed by content experts, and we did this a couple times during the development. And we certainly made tweaks and changes to make sure that it was accurate. But we also then went on to the audience review. We had 12 social and behavioral science researchers who were really a range of individuals. And we had them go through the site. They did a combined usability test and content assessment, which I'll talk about a little bit more, to give us some sort of preliminary feedback about is this working for you? And then we followed up with three of the testers and got a lot more details on an interview. So in general, we'll go through these pretty quickly. We got kind of what wasn't surprising and in many ways very gratifying. Generally, people felt that this was really hitting the mark, but everybody had comments. And as you would expect for any web-based program whatsoever, you have the people who like one thing and you have the people who don't like the same thing. But that's people access the web in very different ways. And so you have to bring that all in, look at what the web standards are, and make just decisions and know that not everybody's going to be happy. But as long as most people can do it, that's great. And lots of suggestions about how we should change things. Some of these we've already incorporated. Some of them we would love to and are looking for ways we can do it, like message boards for collaboration, various things like that. So the additional steps that we are now able to do are formal usability testing. So for those of you that may not be familiar with usability testing, this is really you give them a task, you sit them down, you have them talk out exactly what they're doing as they're going through the site. And this can go anywhere from what we did in a very simplistic fashion on a web-based to putting markers on their eyes somehow and watching where their eyes move on the computer screen to see what they're looking at, where they're going. And it really gives a lot of information about how people are taking in the site and where they're going. So then we get to the more theoretical piece, which is, well, that's great. We built it. We figure out that people like it. We've organized it in a way. But does it accomplish what we want it to accomplish? So this is a combination of implementation and summative evaluation. So implementation, by implementation, I mean, who's using it? How is a faculty member using it in a course? What are the challenges? What are the roadblocks that they may have? And are there things that we need to build to help them? But then there's the other whole set, the people who are going to this on their own. They're practicing researchers. They need more information. Is one program enough to fit both of these individuals or meet the needs of both of these groups? And then also, what are we trying to change? What do we want to measure in the end? And I'll remind you back of the program goals that, yes, they're knowledge-based, but that's not really where we want things to stop, and that they're different levels of evaluation. And we need to think about what can we measure and how do we measure those. So the reaction and learning phases are things that we can measure through the formative evaluation and just a simple summative evaluation. But really what we want to get to is, have they changed their behavior? And then what are the results of that? Are they creating teams that are really transdisciplinary? So these are a number of things that we would like to measure. Increased collaboration, development of new approaches, those types of things. But those are things that are quite difficult to measure. And so we've been quite intrigued recently with the science of team science, which maybe everybody in the room knows all about, but it has been a new concept for me, and we haven't gotten too far into it. But it's actually a way to measure collaborations. How well do people communicate? What is the process of working in a team? And I think that there's a lot of value to be had in thinking about this not only for a program like this, but for health professional teams, for community organizations, for building things. So I know that there's at the NCI, there's some people who are working on it. Northwestern, I've also found, is a pretty strong center. So I think there's something here. What exactly, I think, has yet to be determined. So what I didn't put on, what slide I failed to put on here was sort of a wrap-up. So I think that we have learned a lot of lessons in this development process. I think it really is a community that we really had to go to them and say, what do you actually need? Because a geneticist saying this is what you need isn't going to work at all. I think that the development process of asking an iterativeness has been very important. And I think that there are a lot of lessons to be learned in terms of what are we measuring and how do we measure. It will be a freely available program on the NCHPEG website. If you're interested in doing any of the additional, just taking a look at it, helping us with some additional evaluation, please contact me. Otherwise, it should be out December of this year. So thank you.